Hello, and welcome to the Innovation in Financial Inclusion podcast, focusing on innovative and emerging practice in financial inclusion. I'm Paul Vick from Community Finance Solutions at the University of Salford, a research unit specializing in financial inclusion and community finance. In this episode, we are talking about financial education in the community. According to the Money and Pensions Service, 45% of UK adults say they don't feel confident managing their money. Half the adult population are unable to pass the OECD test in financial literacy, which is below rates of some of our peers, including France and Canada. To learn more about how community-based financial education can improve the financial literacy of adults, I have spoken with Kate McQueen and Matt Dronfield. Kate is the Community Programs Manager at the Money Charity. The Money Charity delivers financial well-being workshops for adults in communities and workplaces and provides financial education to young people in schools, colleges, community settings and universities. Matt is the Director of Advice Services at Toynbee Hall, one of which is Debt-Free Advice, a coalition of charities across London that provide free expert advice to those struggling with financial difficulties. Toynbee Hall is a charity that works with people facing poverty and injustice to help build a fairer and happier London. So, Kate, perhaps you can start by giving us a little bit of a flavour of how you deliver financial education in communities.
So first of all, I should say that we don't actually use the term financial education. So we've found that in community settings for adults, it can be a little bit off-putting. So we generally speak about financial well-being, and that's how we pitch the sessions that we offer. So that we deliver financial well-being sessions in community settings virtually and in person. And our model is really that community groups and charities contact us. So they've seen demand for our sessions in their groups or with their service users. So they contact us asking to organise a specific session. So we offer fundamentals of financial well-being, which is our kind of broadest session. But we also offer lots of specific workshops for young adults, for women. We have a 5-workshop program for refugees and asylum seekers, and we offer a variety of thematic workshops that do kind of deep dives into specific topics, such as pensions, money safety, wills and future planning, and many more. And then the way we deliver those sessions is we have a pool of financial well-being consultants who are experts in the field. They are trained and have lots of experience in delivering our workshops, and they deliver those workshops in community settings or online, depending what the demand is. So yes, that kind of summarizes what we do with adults in the community.
And how do you, because I see that from your, that you also deliver in other contexts, including in workplaces. So how would you say that the community based sort of financial well-being or financial capability aspect differs from perhaps that's delivered in other contexts?
So the main way that it differs that our community workshops are free of charge. So we have funding and we can offer those workshops completely free, which I don't know of any other charities that are currently doing that. I may be wrong. So that's really the main difference in terms of our delivery to workplaces. People pay for those sessions. So we can only deliver free of charge workshops to adults in the community, so service users of charities, community groups, etc. And then as you mentioned, we deliver lots and lots of financial well-being in schools and colleges and to young people. And that kind of differs a little bit in terms of delivery. We also use a consultant model, but compared with workshops in schools, our community workshops for adults are more practical. They have useful tips for adults who are already managing their money. Whereas workshops for young people involve lots of activities and help young people to think about what kind of choices they'll make when it's time for them to manage their own money and live independently. So those are the main kind of strands of our work. And then we also offer consultancy. So an organization might approach us and say, you know, we really want to upskill our team to better support our clients or our service users. And we do a bespoke piece of work with them. We also do consultancies with organizations such as housing associations who come to us and say, we're seeing demand from our residents. Can you offer something to them? And we do a bespoke piece of work with them. So those are the main strands of the work that we do.
So Matt, at Toynbee Hall, you also do deliver financial education, including one of the quite innovative programs you've had is Community Monumentals Project. I don't know if you can talk us through that program.
No, totally. And we've been really excited to deliver Community Monumentals going back a number of years now. So the development and pilot of it started way back in 2010 with delivery from 2012. And the programme emphasises empowering individuals in London to manage their finances more effectively. Participants receive training, become mentors themselves, sharing their own kind of acquired financial skills within their own communities. So what we hope as they go through that program, there's increased knowledge. So the mentors evaluated groups and they reported that they acquired new knowledge based on a range of topics, including their ability to prioritize debts, if that was priority or non-priority, and their spending and saving through online shopping. They also talked about their improved money management skills with the people being able to say that they're very good at managing their money, doubling from 43% to 94%. Which was, yeah, really, really good for us. And most important when it comes to personal finances is around increased confidence. So they reported being more aware of their rights as consumers and opportunities to switch bank accounts previously before the cost of living crisis, switching energy suppliers and so on. And I suppose, you know, the big bit about this is the word community in those money mentors. So they're trained to pass on that knowledge to create a sustainable model where community members educate each other and participants in various London areas ensure that the program's reach and relevance is across diverse communities, highlighting the importance of that local engagement and really tailored content. So, yeah, we've been really pleased with what we've done so far.
And then the graduates, if you can call them that, of the Community Monumentals program will then go on to deliver Community Monumentals programs again aimed at in their own communities and among their own peers. That's right.
Yes, so they end up with a level 3 certificate in that, which then they can take that program, tailor it specifically for the communities or locations in which they're working, and that sustainability of the model has been built in so they can work with new partners, new communities, and adapt it as needed.
And in delivering that program, who are or who should be involved in the delivery of community-based financial education? Because presumably you work with local partners.
We do work with local partners too, and Toynbee Halls has we've been around since 1884, and we've got a great history of working with local partners, other grassroots organisations, and we've never taken the approach that kind of Toynbee knows best and to parachute in and drop our perfect model in. It always needs tailoring for that local audience. But anybody that is connected, we did some research last year, and we know that you're more likely to speak to your pet than your partner around finances. So having a community-based organization that has that trust with that group of people, you've broken down so many barriers already to allow the community money mentors to go in and deliver that piece of education. It's once that trust is established, you're able to get through much more.
And I guess, Kate, that chimes with some, because I was reading one of your policy report where it says that these established communities where people have a relationship, that sort of is one of the key opportunities to promote financial capability.
Absolutely. So I would agree with Matt that we're finding that the people who contact us, so the community groups, the kind of small charities, they're really sitting in their community and listening to what their community members need. So they're really well placed to organize these workshops, provide the venue, help us kind of set up the space, and they can also tell us, you know, what the specific needs of the group are, if we need to adapt sessions at all. So absolutely, people who are sitting in those community settings and working with people every day are really best placed to be involved in delivering financial well-being. And then I suppose where our work slightly differs is we also have these kind of experienced and trained consultants who deliver our well-being, our financial well-being sessions. And I would say as well, as we're seeing, I think Matt mentioned the kind of difference between pre-pandemic and now, as we are seeing a much increased demand for our workshops across all our streams of work. And our delivery has slightly changed in that pre-pandemic, our sessions were slightly more kind of aspirational and helping people think about their financial goals and how they can meet them. I say something that unfortunately has slightly changed given the current economic climate is those messages can be a little jarring, given the reality that people are struggling so much in making ends meet. So we're making sure that our sessions are even more practical, realistic, really in helping people to save and make the most of what they have and basically to make ends meet. So we're always adapting to kind of what's going on in the wider economic climate.
Matt, are you also seeing some of those changes sort of pre and post pandemic?
Oh, we are now. I'd agree with what's been said, but also add on the method of delivery has changed as well. So kind of pre-pandemic and from 2012, it had all been about face-to-face delivery within the community. As we've come back after pandemic, there's been more acceptance of remote delivery as well. So the model has adapted. We've got a second program now called Money Coaching, which is delivered through our debt-free advice brand. Now for that, we're partnering with credit unions and lenders of no interest loans across the country. And people that are being offered a no interest loan are being offered money coaching alongside that. Now, because that's not, because Toy Mickle is delivering that across the country, and that is done via video chat. So customers are able to choose from a selection of 27 kind of modules, and it's tailored. They pick the modules at the beginning to go through that. And there are also group modules as well. So the difference there of putting your trust in somebody that don't necessarily come into contact is new for us, but has been an innovative way of us being able to reach more people at a time in which they've just received a financial product that they might need support and ongoing budgeting advice for.
Can I ask you a question, Matt? Because this sounds like a great offer that you have that I'm not familiar with. So I think you've touched on it, but what is your eligibility for kind of getting involved with your program?
So the current eligibility with our funding streams is for somebody to be a participant in the no interest loan scheme. So there's six providers across the country. And as when they get offered that loan, they are offered money coaching alongside it. So unfortunately at the moment, we're not able to accept kind of self-referrals from outside the network of NILS providers.
That's interesting. And that's sort of a one-off session, is it? Or
no, so they receive seven sessions, each lasting between 45 and an hour each.
I guess financial education, as you alluded to in the beginning, Kate, is can be seen as quite a daunting and sort of potentially slightly dry topic that isn't necessarily going to be that immediately appealing to everyone. So how do you reach and engage local communities in financial well-being, as you call it?
So I think you've really touched on one of the main challenges of delivering our financial well-being sessions to adults in the community is getting people to attend. So what we've found is that when people attend, they benefit from it so much. As Matt mentioned, you know, people feedback their increased confidence, the kind of tips they've learned, and just feeling much more positive about their financial futures. We do find that there's a barrier in terms of people attending. And I think, as you said, speaking about money is still very taboo. I think it was Matt who said about talking to your pets is more easy than talking to your partner. So I think there's definitely the taboo makes things trickier. And also that, yeah, people can think that sitting and talking about money for 2 hours could be quite boring. So that's something that I worked with survivors of domestic abuse for many years. found something similar when I was giving community trainings, that people, you know, there's a lot of taboos. It's something that people aren't sure if they want to come in a room and talk about. So that's something that I'm focused on at the moment, is how to encourage participation. And what we're doing is we're working more closely with the organizations and community groups that are organizing the workshops to make sure that the messaging is out there, that this is an opportunity for people to build their confidence, for people to improve their financial well-being. It's not a space where we're going to talk about anybody's personal circumstances. It's going to be interactive and engaging. It's not going to be very dry and boring. It's actually going to be fun. And we've also been looking at offering, you know, recognizing what's going on economically for people, we're offering a meal before or after the session, which really kind of, I think it encourages people to attend, but also it creates a different atmosphere, which is really nice because it feels a bit more social and breaking bread together. So that's something that we're doing at the moment.
Matt, anything to add in terms of what you've learned about engaging local communities?
Totally. So to start with, to speak about kind of partnerships. So collaborating with other organisations I mentioned earlier on around how you build that trust early on, and how hard that can be to get that if you're kind of a third party trying to enter that space for the first time. So they often have customers often have an established trust and can facilitate that to access the target audience. Peer-to-peer learning, so the Community Money Mentors particularly demonstrated this to utilise the approach. So training individuals within the community become financial educators and they can relate to the person that's sharing that content. Tailoring the content, and both the Community Money Mentors and our money coaching program tailors the units that they're delivering to the unique set of circumstances, the people that's in front of them. That's far more engaging than a traditional kind of webinar or classroom-based environment when you're using scenarios, which can be hard for somebody to see. But what I care about is my situation right now. So that's much more to make it interactive. Digital platforms can be useful. So utilising social media, websites can broaden reach, especially around among younger demographics. Although saying that with a massive caveat that the over-reliance on those digital tools or solely relying on those can exclude a large proportion of the community that might struggle to access that or refer back to it when they're not having that content delivered to them. Like Kate mentioned, kind of the meal thing, incentivization. So certificates, small awards, access to additional resources once you've completed it, all of those things can motivate that participation and make sure somebody completes that education piece that you're trying to deliver. And then as with anything that you're delivering, feedback and adaptation, making sure that you adjust what you're doing as you go through. Some things, you know, we've been doing it for a while, so we've learned. So some things that we found that were less appropriate or approaches, we learned very on that the one size fits all model and trying to design all of your content and then sticking to it doesn't work at all. Infrequent or inconsistent engagement, if you haven't got mapped out exactly when your touch points are and then you try and then rearrange those afterwards, you lose engagement quite quick up. And also a lack of follow-up. So if after following up with the content that you've delivered, participants will lose interest or they may fail to apply what they've learned to their unique circumstances, which is why I said earlier, like if you can tailor it to their circumstances whilst you're in that setting, that's it. And across all of our services that we provide at Toynbee Hall, we try to limit very closely the technical language that's used, and there's so much of it in the finance space, but trying to break down that jargon to terms that people don't find intimidating or confusing can really improve that effectiveness as well.
I would agree with everything Matt has said, and we've been seeing an increased demand for adapted workshops and easy read resources. So we're currently working with an organization called My Life, My Choice to co-design a workshop that will be much more activity based, where we'll have easy read resources. And so we're always kind of looking to expand and adapt our content. And I think another thing that really works, and Matt, I'm sure you found the same, is word of mouth. You know, when people benefit from the sessions or the money mentoring that you're doing, they speak about it. So I'm seeing lots of interest. You know, we'll deliver a session in Peckham, let's say, and suddenly I'll get lots of inquiries from other organisations in Peckham because participants have gone out and said, I went to this session and it was great. And, you know, then we get inquiries and we have more bookings kind of following on from that. So word of mouth is really powerful as well.
I completely agree, especially when you've got the testimonials of what they've achieved personally. So for our community money mentors, 60% of cohorts increased their savings and 45% reduced their debts in the first few years. To be able to say, I've actually done this, you should try it out, is a massive endorsement of what you're offering.
That was a very interesting discussion with lots of insights and tips about community-based financial education. I'd like to highlight four things that I learned from Kate and Matt. The first one being that community-based financial education can improve people's skills, confidence, and financial situation. In the case of the Community Money Mentors program, Matt talked about how they'd seen more than a doubling of people rating their money management skills as very good of those participating in the program. And they'd also seen improvements in terms of debt situation and savings. And Kate talked about how that she has seen increased confidence and people feeling more positive as a result of taking part in some of these programs. The second lesson is that for these programs to be successful, you need to have content that is practical and realistic so that people can actually take action on the back of it to improve their own financial position. So that it needs to be grounded in the economic environment and reality in which people live. Kate talked about how they've been adjusting their programs to account for the emerging economic realities, such as the cost of living crisis. The third point is that there are lots of taboos associated with talking about money. And to get people to participate in financial education programs, you need to break those down or address those. You need to establish trust and break down some of those barriers that exist about talking about finances. Some of the tips from Matt and Kate included delivering the financial education in connection perhaps with the meal, so people can also socialize and build trust. Break down some of the jargon that exists around finance. And also, you don't have to call it financial education because that puts some people off. The final thing I took away is that it's critical to work with local communities to tailor their content and delivery to their needs and preferences. And both Kate and Matt talked about how they'd work with local organizations in terms of design and content and promotion and delivery. And that's it for the Financial Inclusion Podcast with me, Paul. In the next and final episode of this podcast series, I'll be discussing the future of financial education with Quentin Nason, founder of the financial education charity City Pay It Forward. If you want to find out more or contribute to the discussion, go to hub.salford.ac.uk/CFS or follow us on Twitter at CFS_SBS. Bye for now.